Welcome to In It to Win It. This is Stevie B, and this week we are talking precious metals and gold with Jordan. Jordan, thank you for coming on the show.
Hey, Steve. Thank you so much for having me. It's a real pleasure to be on with you today.
Yes. We had you on maybe 6 or 8 months ago, and you pretty much scared the heck out of Daniel and I, so we started delving into precious metals.
I did what... Was it something I said?
I believe it was your statement, the 60-40 portfolio is going to be a dumpster fire. And that really woke me up and made me realize that, that's what I have. Maybe I need a little insurance.
Yeah, well, I mean, it doesn't necessarily, I'm not saying it's going to be a dumpster fire today or tomorrow or next month or maybe even next year. But if you look at all the, you look at even conventional statistics and expectations for market returns over the next decade, it shows that it's going to be pretty negative.
Yeah. Okay. So let me lead with this. What's your overall assessment of the economy and where we stand today?
Well, I'll just say that I'm not an economist, even though a lot of economists, their assessments, they don't get it right. So it's not my area of expertise, but my sense is we see, it just seems like everywhere things are rebounding in terms of economic activity. It seems like every business is hiring. It doesn't matter where you are, what part of the country. I mean, there's economies in various areas of the U.S. Can be much different, but it appears to me that like pretty much in every region, hiring is in demand. And so I'd say we're still recovering. Obviously inflation and higher prices is a problem, and it looks like that's not going to fade away. I mean, it might fade away a little bit if oil prices peak out. But that could be an issue over the next year, but I think the economy is okay for now. It's still recovering. The larger picture though is, we had a really long expansion and then we had a 2-month recession, which is basically unheard of. So it was more of a shock to the system, a shock to the economy. So during a real recession, businesses go out of business, people go bankrupt, all those sorts of things happen. You have to clear out bad debts and that sort of thing for the next recovery to be able to take shape. And, having a real recession and having it last for, at least a year or so, that facilitates the ability to have a recovery that can last for several years. And so my point is, since we had a shock, we didn't really have a long recession. So with that said, I don't think there's a lot of room for this expansion to last. I don't think it's gonna last 6, 7, 8, 9. It might not even last 3 or 4 years. So that's kind of how I see things. You have to evaluate things on different time frames. So the here and now, things look decent, still kind of recovering. Inflation probably going to be an issue next year, but if we move out a couple years, I think it's going to be difficult for the economy to continue to grow just because of the fact that we didn't have a real long sustained downturn. And, coming into that shock, we had a 10 or 11 year expansion. So you build up a lot of bad debts, you build up a lot of excess. So that's kind of where we are. And it's, I like to look for historical comparisons, and they're really, for this kind of situation, there really isn't a good historical comparison.
Yeah, that's what I'm learning is we could find similarities back in history, but we've never been at a point where every single country on the planet is on a fiat currency. And so there's not really a blueprint. In one of your recent newsletters, and we'll talk about how to get into that later, but you mentioned tapering and rate hikes. Can you kind of give us just a bare basic definition of vocabulary of those words?
Okay, well, rate hikes is when the Federal Reserve goes into the market and they essentially they buy and sell securities in order to manipulate interest rates to a certain level, whether they're in, you know, whether they're increasing or decreasing rates. So that's what they do. Tapering, that refers to the quantitative easing that they've been doing, which essentially they're going into the market and they're buying bonds to keep interest rates from increasing. So after the, and this isn't my line of expertise, but I know a little bit about it. But if you go back, you know, why would they do that? Well, they don't want interest rates to be too high or credit to be too tight, because that'll impact the economy. So they're providing really artificial support for the economy. And so they're finally, you know, starting to taper. That means they're going to take a little bit off of the buying that they're, I don't know the exact figures because, again, this isn't my expertise. I mean, you can look at the news, but they're still going to taper. They're just slowly doing it less and less. And that's their hope, is that they can eventually get back, you know, get down to zero where they're not supporting the market. And then they can raise rates in concert, and you know, maybe they'll see if the economy can stand on its own 2 feet. So that's the purpose of that policy. They're basically, they've been accommodating significantly to the economy in credit markets. And so they're just taking their foot off the gas a little bit to see if the economy and economic activity can function without their artificial support.
So by tapering, they're saying instead of handing out $120 billion a month in stimulus, we're gonna knock it down to 95 or something like that.
Correct. Correct. Exactly.
Okay. Okay. And now, what happens when Uncle Sam injects extra currency into the economy like that with their stimulus and just generally as a whole?
Well, you get some kind of inflation. I mean, back in the day, when we had a less financialized economy, you'd get inflation in the economy. You know, what we've been seeing for the most part over the last, let's say 15 years or so, is it's actually been helping the financial markets. Like, this policy has been, it's been helping the 1% and the super rich big time. They're getting much, much richer. This money has gone into the financial markets. It's gone into real estate, and it has not, you know, and myself, along with a lot of other gold bugs, you know, we thought this would be a disaster 10 years ago. And, you know, honestly, we were wrong about that. The money was not, it didn't make its way into the economy. It went into, you know, it helped the financial sector. It kind of re-liquefied that economy, you know, financial, you know, real estate, you know, brokers, banks, you know, all of that. So that's where the money has gone. But it's important to note that, yeah, when they inject this money into the system, it has to go somewhere. And that's been the result. And a lot of, you know, mainstream financial types, which I know I have a lot of contempt for, respectfully, I say that, but they say, oh, there's no inflation, this is not a problem. But the problem is, you can see that, okay, this it's pushed up, you know, stock prices, but also real estate. So now you're seeing, you know, the people who own real estate, they're getting richer and richer. And the average, you know, it's distorting the market, where the average person used to be able to, you know, they could live in, you know, Seattle or Los Angeles or San Francisco or New York City, or wherever, you know, pick almost any city in the country. You know, they could just have a basic job, live in these cities, afford to live there. Now, it's not possible. And that's been one of the negative effects, one of the unintended consequences. So that's the inflation in asset prices, like real estate and stock prices. It can have very negative impacts for society. And that's one of the biggest, is that it's kind of crowding out people in terms of, you know, only the 1% can afford to live in these cities. And so it creates, you know, whenever you're injecting fake money into the, or not even real money, I mean, they're printing the money, basically. But whenever you're doing that, there's always some negative consequence. And, you know, what we're going to see more of, I think, over this decade and probably the next one is, you know, policymakers are aware of that. They have seen that this has had very negative consequences for society. I mean, you can see the political consequences. Populism is on the rise because people are rightfully pissed off about it. I mean, we had this financial crisis, and instead of the, you know, average person got hurt, you know, all the banks, the financial system, they all got bailed out. And as I said before, they've benefited from these policies. It has not helped the average person. And so policymakers now can see that, you know, cutting rates, that's not going to help. You know, we have to see more on the fiscal side. We have to see more government spending. And that's, so the you know, to make a long answer short, the shift in kind of, you know, what policymakers are trying to do this time around, they know that they have to help the average person. And so that's going to be more inflationary in the economy relative to, you know, what we've seen over the last decade, where they just, you know, like I said, it was this stimulus and quantitative easing was helping asset prices and helping the rich get richer and not the average person.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Now, how can we take that information when rate hikes and interest rates and the government maybe tapering a little bit on their stimulus? What does tapering mean to gold, and what would a interest rate hike mean to gold?
Well, I'm much more keen on the interest rate hike component than tapering. I mean, they are starting to taper. Maybe gold is getting a little bit of a bounce here, because what people have to understand with news is that the market discounts these things in advance. Like, there's rarely, I mean, unless it's like a real shocking piece of news. But the market tends to sniff these things out in advance. The Federal Reserve gives hints that they're going to hike. You know, they don't just suddenly surprise the market. They really telegraph it. They've done the same thing with tapering. So there's much more of a history with respect to rate hikes. And so I've looked at the last 50 years, and there's been 8 different rate hike cycles. And in 6 or 7 of those, if gold has declined in the months leading up to the start of a new rate hike cycle, it has put in a bottom and had a significant rebound. And if you actually look historically at the most significant bottoms in the gold market, like almost everyone except for one was at the same time the Federal Reserve started to hike interest rates. And that tends to be counterintuitive, because if you follow gold over the last 20 years, the driver for the most part has been the Fed, their easy policy, they're cutting rates, they're printing money. So it's been more of a fear of deflation and recession and the economy being weak. So all of those things have, they've had, you know, and the Fed, again, printing money, cutting rates aggressively. That is bullish for gold, just generally speaking. But at the same time, you know, gold can also do well when inflation is increasing and it continues to increase and accelerates and people get concerned about that. So that's the other side. That was a driver in the late 60s and 1970s.
Maybe I could pull up that graph you sent me here. Okay, I'm going to share my screen here. The gold rate hikes graph. That's the one you're talking about, right?
The vertical lines just show when the Fed started to hike interest rates. When they began a new cycle. Yes.
Blue and red lines.
Yeah, they began a new cycle of interest rate hikes. And so, you know, there's 8 times, and really gold, actually 7 of the 8 times gold did really well around the same time, you know, but gold might bottom a couple months before, a couple months after. But you can see here that, based on the last 20 years, the conventional wisdom would be, the Fed's going to hike interest rates. That's negative for gold. Well, typically what happens is leading into that hike, the market sniffs that out, discounts it in advance. But when it actually happens, you know, gold has a kind of like a reflex rebound. And then if inflation keeps increasing and the Fed has to keep hiking rates because inflation is increasing, gold can continue to move higher. And so, I mean, the best example of that was twice in the 70s. But, you know, at the same time, if you look at the most significant lows in gold, I would say, you know, you have, to me, like the three most significant historically are probably 1976, 1999, and then very end of 2015. And all those three were the Fed started hiking interest rates around those times. So historically, the major bottoms in gold occur when the Fed starts hiking interest rates. And, you know, we know that gold has been correcting for 15 months. You know, it had a huge move. I mean, it has a super bullish cup and handle pattern going back the last 10 years.
Yeah,
and
so it's you're building. This is the gold price right here. So you're talking from like 2011 coming down, looking like a cup. We're building the handle right here in the last 18 months or so, right?
Right. We're building the handle. And so when you look at these, you know, and the handle is setting up for eventually what'll be an explosive move higher. Now, it's important to note, you know, nobody knows if that's, explosive move is going to start now, 6 months, 2 years, or 12 months. But it's just generally the probability over the next couple of years, it's setting up for a significant move higher. And based on this, you know, this Federal Reserve policy in the history, we can see gold, the significant bottoms occur when the Fed starts hiking interest rates. And if you look at Fed funds futures, which is, I mean, it's a very technical thing, but that's, you know, traders that are buying and selling, you know, bond contracts back and forth. There's a probability calculated from that. It changes all the time.
Yeah.
But the probability based on right now that the Fed is probably going to hike interest rates, I think the June meeting of next year. So a rate hike is not imminent. I mean, it could change. It could be sooner or later. But that tends to be my thinking, is that at some point next year, we're probably going to see the Fed hike rates. Gold is probably going to bottom around that time. And, you know, the last four times they did that, gold made, I think it had an average of a 27% rebound based on the rate hike. Now, one thing I'll mention.
The spot price of gold you're talking about, yes, right? Not the leverage bet of the stocks of the graph on the bottom, right?
Yes, yes. Okay. But one thing to note, 1993-94, that's the only time that the market had the gold market moved well in advance of the Fed hiking rates. The market started moving 9 months before the Fed hiked interest rates. So there is some precedent that, I mean, if you want to say, you know, if someone could make the argument that gold it's already bottomed, it's going to start moving up. Just look at what happened in 1993, 94. So there is a possibility, but I side with, you know, the rest of the data, which says it usually bottoms, you know, a couple months before when that hike happens, or a month or two after.
Yeah, yeah. 6 out of 8 times this formula works. And so we're dealing in probabilities here, not
right. And also, and you get, and the context is important, because again, if the gold market is weak over the next 3 or 4 months, and you know, the Fed funds futures and the action in the market is starting to discount a hike, then we know that it's more likely that this is going to play out. Now, if gold were to start moving up before the hike, then that, you know, that would kind of, I would say, I mean, that would throw a lot of cold water on my thesis, because look at what happened in 1983, for example. That was one scenario where gold actually it recovered. I mean, it crashed and then it recovered into that rate hike. So that's why I mentioned context. It's so important what we're talking about here, because this analysis could change over the next 3 or 6 months. If gold starts rebounding and makes a big move higher, then at that point, I would say it's when the Fed hikes, it's probably not going to have a huge rally, because it's acting different compared to all these other times. So that's why it's so important to evaluate the context of all these things that are happening.
Okay. I want to point out something to our viewers here too. If you're listening to the show, just click on the link in the show notes. It'll take you over to YouTube and you can see the graphs that we're talking about and you'll know about the leverage bets here. So basically, like, look at this. This is the spot price of gold here in this middle graph. And if you look down below, these are the gold stocks. Okay. So see how much of an exaggeration this bottom graph is compared to the top. So this is the physical spot price of gold, and down here are the gold stocks. So if you can pick a good time to bet on gold in general and do it through the stocks, you'll make far more than you would in the physical market. It's an exaggeration. And this is kind of your specialty, right, Jordan?
Correct. And yeah, and that's a very old, at the bottom, that's a Barron's Gold Mining Index, which goes back, something like 80 years. So it's not the, you know, today there's ETFs like GDX and GDXJ and some other indexes that go back 30 or 40 years. But I like to take a super long look at things. So that's why I use the Barron's Gold Mining Index in this analysis. Because to be honest, you know, a lot of people don't know about that index and they're not, you know, they're the, that's why no one else is, I mean, I'm beating my own chest here, but you know, no one else tends to do this analysis because they're not, I mean, there's a few people who are familiar with the Barron's Gold Mining Index, but most people just look at stock charts that go back like 10 or 15 years. And for me, that's just not, that's not enough. When you're evaluating history, you have to look at 100 plus years.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to bring up the other graph you got here. Okay. So, yeah. Okay. Gold stocks versus the S&P 500. Okay, so what does that mean?
Okay, so this is not gold stocks. This is a ratio of that gold stock index divided by the stock market. So, you know, this is important for people to know. When you're investing money, there's different, you can put it in real estate, you can put it in stocks, you can put it in emerging market stocks, you can put it in gold stocks. So I like to compare these things against each other because that gives it gives you more information rather than just looking at something by itself. And so here at the top, I'm basically just gold stocks against the stock market, and that gives you a lot of information about relatively which is doing better. And then if you look at some other factors, you can figure out why. But in one of those other factors at the bottom, that's the CAPE ratio, which is a 10-year PE ratio. So this is a significant valuation indicator for the stock market. And again, it's not, there's a price earnings ratio, but that's like an immediate, that's, you know, what's price earnings ratio. It can be based on what a company's estimated earnings are. You can measure it, the estimated, what are the analyst expectations for the next 12 months? Or trailing, which is the last 12 months, the CAPE ratio looks at the last 10 years. And so that is a very significant valuation indicator because when the CAPE ratio moves to an extremely high level, the stock market over the next decade tends to perform poorly. And it's the exact opposite. When the CAPE ratio moves to a very low level, the odds of the stock market performing very well over the next decade are good. And we're giving this a 10,000 foot view, and gold and the S&P 500, when the major trend for one is up, it tends to be down or sideways for the other one. So over a long-term time frame, precious metals and the stock market, they tend to diverge. And so it's been very interesting because gold and gold stocks have done decently over the last 5 years, but they haven't really outperformed the stock market. And if you look at, and that there is some comparison to that, if you go back to the 1960s, that was a similar period where we saw gold stocks, gold stocks started to do well and the stock market was still doing well, but they really didn't, you know, gold and the gold stocks really didn't outperform dramatically until the 1970s.
Yeah. Okay.
But you can see, I mean, I want to highlight, you see the box there looking
at the one from the late 50s to early 70s?
Yeah. So it looks very similar to the box that we've had over the last 6 or 7 years. And the arrows show actually when gold stocks bottom. So just by themselves, that's when they put on a major bottom, you know, 1957, 2016, those were major bottoms. But you can see it for a while, they weren't, you know, they really didn't start outperforming the stock market until you could probably, I think it was like 1964. I mean, they did, relatively speaking, they did come back a lot in 1972, but it was really the mid 60s when they didn't start to, or when they did start to really outperform the stock market. So we haven't seen that yet for gold stocks in recent years. Again, you know, the boxes look fairly similar. And so to get back to the Cape at the bottom, we can see that when the Cape, that long-term valuation indicator, when it hits a major peak and starts to come down, that aligns with gold stocks really outperforming the stock market. And so the, you know, one issue for gold stocks in gold in recent years, even though they've performed reasonably well, the stock market has still been moving higher. And, you know, you look at the Cape ratio, you can see it's at 38 today. And so that's, I mean, that's very extreme. And we don't, like I said, this economic cycle, I'm not an economist. I don't know how long it's going to last, but I would not, if I were going to bet, I'd guess maybe a couple more years. And that's just my sense is when this cycle ends, the Cape ratio is going to peak and then it'll turn down. And the fact that the Cape ratio is already extremely high, that's telling you that how the stock market is going to perform over the next decade. It's likely to not be good. I mean, it doesn't mean it's going to, you know, crash like 1929. I mean, that if you look at the, you should study the what happened in the 1960s and 70s, because the period, today for the stock market, it feels a lot like the late 90s, but also the late 60s. I mean, 1968 to 1974 was a real horrible time for the stock market, but nobody talks about that. They talk about 1929. They talk about, you know, the late 90s or 2007, 2008. So that's another factor to consider. But, you know, circling back to gold and the gold stocks, you know, they are likely to make that next huge move higher when the stock market and the economy start to run into trouble again. And so that's just my sense. You know, maybe it'll be 1 year, maybe 3 years. I mean, I don't have a crystal ball, but again, that's what's been holding gold and gold stocks back. Because a lot of people have been saying, oh, there's all this inflation, been printing tons of money, you know, they're not doing well, they're going to crash, blah, blah, blah. But with respect to the printing money and inflation, if inflation is sticky and continues, I don't want to get too technical, but going back to the first question, you know, the economy is still in recovery mode. And so the inflation isn't necessarily bad yet. I mean, the inflation has to persist for a while. It has to change consumer attitudes. And so when that becomes a problem, that's when it's going to hurt the stock market and when gold is going to, you know, retake the leadership, you could say. And so this, I love a chart like this because it gives you a great historical view, and you can understand, you know, this is what has to happen for gold and gold stocks to really outperform and make that next big move. It's going to happen when the stock market turns down, when the Cape ratio turns down. And we can see that, again, the Cape, it's at 38. I read something that said it's at 40 today. I mean, maybe that's wrong, but so it's still going up.
Either way, it's up at the upper echelon right. of the graph over the last 100 years.
Yeah, and last thing, because I know I'm babbling on, but you know, gold has had this significant correction. If you look at the chart of gold just by itself, a lot of people are worried, oh, this could be a repeat of 2013 or 2014. And, you know, and I look at where the Cape was in 2009 and also, you know, 2011 when gold peaked.
Yeah.
The Cape ratio was actually, okay, it wasn't as low as it was in the 40s or 1982, but that's still, look how low that was like a 20-year low at that point. I mean, that was And if you look at the gold stocks against the, you look at the ratio chart, you can see how much they had already moved up. Like, yeah. Look at that. They had already made a massive move for 10 or 11 years. And so today we're in a much different, and this is why ratio charts are important, because you, someone can look at gold and say, oh, well, this, you know, gold's super high. Look how expensive it is. And by the way, if I put gold against the S&P 500 at the top, it would look the same, basically. The shape of it would be the same. So again, if someone could look at gold and they'd say, oh, well, it's 1800. This is really high historically. But if you compare gold to the S&P 500 or your real estate or how much money has been created in the economy and all, you know, the Fed balance sheet, if you look at gold compared to all those things, they're near major lows. Like on this chart, you can see the gold stocks. That this kind of relative analysis is telling you how cheap gold and precious metals are as an asset class versus the stock market. And yeah. when the stock market does poorly, in a very big picture sense, precious metals do well. Now, it's important to note that doesn't mean that for the next 10 years, I mean, I think this will turn in gold's favor, in gold stock's favor, but that doesn't mean every single year, you know, because there could be a year where the stock market goes down 30%, the gold stocks go down 40%. There could be a year where they both go up together. So it's, you know, I'm talking about the major, you know, decade long secular trends here.
The very, very long term, yes. Bet. Yeah. I subscribe to your, newsletter, and, I got your 10 bagger report. So if, our listeners and viewers go to, thedailygold.com, they can sign up for your 10 bagger report. And basically what that is that that's you breaking down a junior gold mining company, and 10 bagger in the precious metals world means a 10x move, right?
Yes. And you can get that if you go to actually thedailygold.com/top stock pick. And that's my top pick, my largest investment for the next couple of years. And the, you know, these stocks are very risky. People need to understand that. I mean, they're highly volatile. And so if you look at, there are periods where gold has done very well, but there are also periods where it hasn't. So, I mean, if you look at 2018 to 2020, you know, there were some companies that made great moves, and someone could have thought, hey, this is great, I'm going to buy in. Summer of 2020, well, look what happened. You know, gold's down, what, it corrected almost 20% or 20%. The stock's corrected 35% or 40%. So it's very tricky. It can be very dangerous if you don't know what you're doing. And so when I'm investing in these companies, I really try and take a look at, you know, I tend to prefer, I mean, there's exploration, which is risky, and I own a few of those, but I tend to prefer the smaller companies that are, they're building a mine that has growth potential that a larger company would want to buy, or they already have a mine and they're increasing production there. They have another project that they're going to turn into a mine. So those are the things I look for, because we know in any business, growth is what the market wants. And look, in mining, if you're not growing, you're dying.
Yeah.
That's just the reality. So I try and look for small companies that have that production growth potential. And so these companies are called juniors. And juniors, just think of juniors like the R&D for the larger mining industry.
Yeah.
And, you know, in exploration, you know, the major companies, I think they used to do a lot of this until like the late 90s, but the market was so bad that they basically stopped doing that. And so now it's the junior sector. Like, they're the ones who go out and try and find the mines of the future. You know, they spend the money to drill and do all the studies and test. And then if they're really successful and they have something a major would want, then, you know, a major will come out and buy them at some point. So invest in your
Barrick or Newmont will come out and buy them up.
Right. And so that, I mean, that's kind of, it is when you're investing in these juniors, you are, it's the R&D for the Barricks and the Newmonts. And if it's something, because if they find something, you know, just think of like Facebook buying Instagram, or, you know, a drug, Pfizer, whoever, buying a small company that has a fantastic drug. It's the same thing in this industry, where if a company they make a fantastic discovery that's worth billions, the larger companies will have to fight over it, you know, because they know this, you know, we're Barrick, we have to have this.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, that's, you know, that's an exciting part of the sector, but it's, again, I think the outlook is fantastic for the sector, especially over the next 3 to 5 years, but you can, on the way there to, you know, I think gold has a good chance to go to 3,000, 4,000, 5,000, but on the way there, it can be very tricky and you can lose your shirt if you're not careful. So I would just encourage people to, you know, learn as much as they can and do as much research as possible. I started investing in this stuff 2005 and I just got lucky. You know, that's the other thing. You have to have humility. The market, you know, you can't confuse your own brains with the bull market. You know, I did really well in the 2005 to 2007 period, but I didn't know what I was doing. I was just looking for small companies that were increasing production, but all these other things I didn't know, and I had to learn. So that's, yeah, I mean, there's great opportunity here, but just please educate yourself and understand you can lose your shirt, you know, yes. on the way to this market moving much, much higher. It's easy to lose your shirt. So, you know, be very careful.
Yeah. I think this is an avenue where, you can have your safer bets in, let's say with physical, right? And then from there, if you want to leverage it a little bit, you can maybe bet on some of the majors, right? Maybe Barrick Gold or Newmont or something like that. And then if you want to get into the weeds a little bit, you can start betting on some of these juniors and like that. And each one of them, as you go up or down the list, depending on how you want to look at it, will be a leverage bet on the other one. And so, yeah, don't bet what you can't lose. But I got to tell you, as a member of your premium service, it's really cool because every week you get a report and you break down these mining companies and what you're looking for. And, you know, I understand the technicals fairly well, so I can read those graphs, but I have no idea when it comes to behind the scenes, you know, and the drilling results and all that. It is a lot of fun. And for $150 for 6 months and get a weekly print out, and I mean, each one is anywhere from 25 to 30 something pages, so you get a lot of material and a lot of stuff. And you throw out the updates, you know, on Wednesday. Hey, you may want to buy, and that's another thing too, is if the market looks like it's going down, we can bet on the other side and make money and as it goes down. And anyways, it's a lot of fun. I dig it. If you guys have any interest in gold mining stocks, which I know you do because you're buying gold, then sign up for Jordan's service. Just go to thedailygold.com and you can join me in this fun. You also mentioned, you know, put in a mental stop loss at 20%. I like that a lot. That keeps you from losing your shirt, as you say. Jordan, this has been a lot of fun. Thank you for coming on, and we'll have to have you on in the future to get some updates as we push through this bull market.
Oh, my pleasure. I really enjoyed it. Look forward to coming back and speaking with your audience again.